Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Every Other Week Tuesday open call. And we're here. This is the week. This isn't the other week when we're not here, which should be rather obvious to everyone. And there's Mr. Jesse. Better late than never, Mr. Jesse.
My phone says 8 o'clock on the money.
Actually, it's
late.
32 seconds past the hour. 32 seconds. Now it's 38 seconds after the hour.
Aggravated, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, we are here to see who else joins us tonight. And I'm going to unmute Terry here. I see her on the board. Good evening, Terry. We have John and myself and Jesse and Terry, and the only one that isn't here is Larry. And we'll see if he shows up. So it is.
So how's it over in Texas?
I'm looking outside and I see mostly blue sky with a few puffy white clouds up there. It's upper 60s, and got a west-northwest wind somewhere around 8 or 9 miles an hour. So a nice day. I haven't even been out. I haven't done my walk. I'm going to end up doing that tonight after the call because I've just been busy with stuff. Today was the last day of the month of March. Hard to believe. We're already a quarter of the way through the year. It's
great.
Just absolutely bizarre, but things have been pretty crazy here the last few weeks. Is everybody enjoying their sheltering in place or whatever it is they're calling
quarantining?
It where you are? You're
no.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, not half.
Well, for me, not a lot different. To be honest with you, I spend a good part of my time in front of the computer, either taking care of e-water stuff, answering emails, or getting stuff ready to ship, and watching market stuff. But the market stuff, needless to say.
I was going to say, what would you watch that for? $11 trillion gone in the market.
Yeah.
What could really look at? Not crying.
The worst. The worst quarter in history for the stock market.
Yeah. Good. If people don't know that, $11.5 trillion estimated taken out of people's accounts. Literally, that's where it went, basically. It's gone.
Yeah, it's...
But somebody always makes that money. Somebody always says, the market lost $11 trillion, but somebody made $11 trillion. That's the part that everybody seems to forget.
It just... trades from one hand to another hand. I made money this month.
You got it, buddy. Yep. You can short all kinds of crap and make a pile of money.
I've got 3 put options on the SPYs right now. I just put on because everybody ran the market up the last couple of days here. Because they wanted to have as good a quarter as they possibly could. And
right.
Now they're going to be bailing because tomorrow is the first day of the second quarter of the year, new month, new quarter. And a lot of statistical information will be coming out, including the monthly unemployment claims on Friday. And they're going to be really, really, really bad. And that's going to scare people all over again. In fact, the S&P futures are now, we are down 36 points just since 5 o'clock Central Time. They're rolling over. And that's fine. I get 3 put options. And for anybody that doesn't know anything about options, if you have a put option, it means you expect the market to go down. If you have a call option, you expect it to go up. Well, I've got 3 put options.
Yep.
Does that tell you anything?
It's pretty clear what you're thinking there, Dave.
Yeah.
I'm aggravated. Let's go ahead and start the recording anyway. So let me do this.
Do the disclaimer, and then we all stay out of jail. Not that they got time to chase us for this point, but make it all legal.
They got nothing really. But anyway, guys, thank you for coming. I don't know how many people are even going to be here tonight with all this coronavirus nonsense running all over the place. But, of course, if you're looking for legal advice, we have none to give. That's not what we do. So I want to make this clear that we do not give legal advice. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about certain matters, current affairs and certain cases and certain things that all our moderators have gone through. But again, guys, if you're looking for legal advice, go seek an attorney. We recommend you do. There's plenty of them out there. And I bet you a bunch of them is starving right about now. So at the end of the day, man, here's what I'm really, really sore about. So, you know, from a business standpoint, they have shut down all our shows nationwide. So it's cost me well into the six figures this month in losses, okay, just for the business. On the personal side, we just got news today that they've canceled our third derby in a six-week period. So there I know for sure is 30 G's minimum gone, personally gone. And now nothing happens till the end of May in Texas. We got Texas Bass Fest, and we have the Sabine River down there in Orange, Texas. So if that continues, but what aggravates me the most is, and Terry, you're in the Carolinas. So South Carolina has shut down all the boat ramps, Ohio, Kentucky, Alabama starting to do it. Florida and some of the counties have done it. Is the way that things are going, or the way they're going about doing things and the overreacting that's happened to this.
Yep.
And that's the part that I have a huge issue. It's not that, hey, I don't want to comply. I don't think we need to use social distancing, common sense. I agree with all that. But I put something up on my Facebook, on my professional page there, on the Swiss. And I don't know if you guys have seen that article that was put out the other day, because I tell you, the media tries to hide everything that could be possibly give an American a little different viewpoint of reality. Yeah, well, a viewpoint of reality is just to see how screwed up we really are. So, you know, it's aggravating, and it aggravates me because of that. It's not like it's the end of the world or any of that. I just it gets really, really aggravating. I need to look at – I'm going to get this. I want to share this with other people, and it gives you an idea. God, my internet has been so slow. And, you know, the internet worldwide is slowing down because it hasn't had this much pressure all at once forever. You guys know that?
Yeah, mine is really.
Everybody's working from home, and they're not working, so they're talking to their friends and everything else.
Exactly. That's been the problem.
Yeah, even trying to load your email is, and that's all I'm doing right now. I'm staying off the computer, but when I am trying to deal with internet and email and stuff, it takes forever to load anything.
Right.
Well, I'm fortunate where I am, being in the big city of Dallas. I mean, I've seen no effect so far on that. So I know there's a lot of people
really?
That are having slowdowns. Yeah. Well, I'm on fiber optic to just right down at the driveway here. We've got an RT where it's fiber optic to there, and I'm just on copper from there to the building I'm in. And we've got one of the biggest CO's central offices that AT&T has. Actually, it's the biggest central office in the world. It's located about 5 miles from me. That's where all the stuff comes from. Yeah, I'm close to the... the best and fastest equipment they've got in the world.
And
that's why you're there.
We have the exact opposite, the worst internet you can possibly get, and we're under lockdown, stay in your house, and curfew for
the
entire
county.
You know, and so everybody can't go back and forth and talk to each other. And so cell signal is overloaded, internet is overloaded, because that's what everybody's doing, except for me. You know, I'm like, nope, my computer is on its last legs. I only turn it on when I really need to use it. So I'm conserving it for that reason. And the other reason is I don't need to be sitting there online competing with all this overload. I just don't need to.
You're right.
Exactly.
Well, there's two articles. One of them I got off of Fox 32 in Chicago, which I'm glad they put this out there. But the CDC, this is just one. I'm gonna read you the Swiss article because that's the most interesting one. But this says 24,000 dead from the flu so far this season, the CDC says. Now, this was updated 2 days ago, this article. And it says the CDC estimates that as of March 21st, there have been at least 39 million flu illnesses, 400,000 hospitalizations, and 24 deaths from flu in the United States, including 155 children. Why isn't that on the news? Why wouldn't you be more afraid of that than the coronavirus? It doesn't make any logical sense to me. 24,000, there's 222 people per day, every day. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm going to give you this precursor, and this is how I wrote it. I said, this is how the U.S. should be handling this. People criticize Trump for wanting to take back our normalcy, but he's 100% right in wanting it. The long-lasting consequence far outweighs the risk. Remember that all the bad decisions made by bad, non-business-minded politicians that affect millions of people for no good reason go unpunished. They are still collecting their full paycheck, retirement, and perks, while millions who pay them are facing the hardest times of their life. We can't even go fishing without facing the threat of jail, fine, or both. Thanks to Osceola County bureaucrats for making all these bad decisions based on 70 cases out of 368,000 people in our county. We now know who not to reelect. So
well,
that is an example.
Yes,
go ahead.
Because, you know, we're in the same stupid decisions made here. And our,
they're made nationwide,
under,
so, yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah.
We have under 5 cases. Under 5. In
yeah, I know. And that's why Trump doesn't want to do a full nation lockdown. So this is going to verify and make America look stupid, as it usually does with all of its arrogance, to some of these other countries that are far better thinkers than our leaders and our people and our politicians. But, you know, America is one of the most arrogant countries in the world, period, end of story. It's citizens, it's politicians, everybody. But you go overseas, and if you have any experience overseas, you go, holy shit, we're not really that smart. We're pretty stupid. Just take a look, you know, Alabama, some places. You'll see some rednecks. You're like, holy shit. You don't see that kind of shit anywhere else in the world but the United States. You just don't see that kind of people. It doesn't exist. So, but Americans aren't aware of that. They think the redneck is a typical normal thing everywhere you go. No, it's not. It doesn't exist in Europe anywhere. It just doesn't exist. So, but my point is that Sweden's resistance, here's the article, Sweden's resistance to lockdown raises questions about our own approach. And this was written by Annabelle Fenwick, a senior editor over at The Telegraph in the UK. And she says, ever pragmatic, Sweden knows the cost of total lockdown is wildly disproportionate to the facts. I've always admired the Swedes, even compared to the Nordic neighbors. They are unequivocally nonconformist. Meet Jesse, I'm a nonconformist. You guys all know that anyway. True to form, Sweden is currently the only country in the Western world which appears to be handling the coronavirus with such restraint, or at least putting off extreme intervention as long as possible. Sweden cannot take draconian measures that have a limited impact on the epidemic, but knock out the functions of society, stated the public health secretary, saying out loud what so many are thinking, that the horse has already bolted, a vaccine is probably 18 months away, the coming weeks and months will inevitably overwhelm national health system, but that far more lives and livelihoods will be destroyed as a result of shutting the entire industries than lives lost to this virus. And that's a fact.
Yeah.
It goes on and on, but that just in the first two paragraphs, it sums it all up.
Economics, the economically caused death toll is far going to outweigh the virus.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it really boggles the mind when I see these things going on and I get my calls from people. And then I see other Americans going, oh, yeah, that's the right call. That's what they should do. And I'm like, have you lost your mind? Like, you know, you can't see what's going on around you. It just doesn't, you know.
No, you know. They can't.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you must be so
blind. You know,
just, I mean,
that,
you just
that's
so
the answer to your question, because half our country needs an anal craniotomy, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it,
right.
That's not going to change.
Yeah, I'm blown away. I mean, you know, Go ahead, Dave.
No, okay. The economic consequences of this, even if this ended tomorrow, will be felt
for
years.
You're going to pay for generations.
Okay.
Yeah, generations to come will pay for all this. Yeah.
If this ended tomorrow and everybody was told, well, we made a mistake, go back to work, there would still be massive numbers of businesses that would close up for good.
Never
economic effects would be felt for years. If this goes on anywhere from 2 to 4, possibly 5 months forward from right now, which is very possible, this country will never even remotely recover to where it was before this happened.
No. No way.
It never would recover.
Right.
Because it's going to change the whole mental view of the inhabitants of this country and other countries as well. It's going to change everything permanently. In fact, our country is never going to be the same. Our world is never going to be the same because of this. It isn't going to be, oh, remember a couple of years ago when we had that pandemic deal and they had us locked down for a while? Oh, no. People will be talking about that 30 years from now, how foolish it was, what happened, and how much civilization was set back as a result of it. And I'm reading stuff, you know, you guys, most people out there know I'm a trader. I'm reading stuff like from Goldman Sachs and other people that, oh, yeah, this is going to turn around and the economy is going to roar and the market is going to go to new highs within 18 months. That's pure bullshit.
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
That is somebody trying to get people to believe that, oh, my God, Armageddon isn't here. And economic Armageddon is not only on our front porch, it's inside the door. And it's moving slowly throughout the house. And you can't stop it. Not now. We've been waiting a long time for the House of Cards to collapse. It has started. And when I say the House of Cards, I'm talking the whole financial system as we have known it all our lives, because it's unsustainable for it to go on in any reasonable fashion with this coming down. So get ready for hard times, everybody. There's going to be so many people that are going to be unemployed. There's going to be, and I mean, like I was
going to be
the conversation I was having. Yeah. Well.
Yeah, my husband just got laid off today, so no paycheck for him.
But you start thinking, and I'll just mention a couple of things here. I could talk for hours in this respect, but I'll mention just several things. How many people, excuse me, are going to end up working from home? They used to go to an office, and they're now working from home. They still have jobs. There's technology businesses, so on and so forth. You can work remotely. How many of those people are going to, going forward, work from home? Their employers will be fine and happy with them working from home, telecommuting, and not coming into the office. So if you don't go into the office, how many miles do you put on your car each year? How many tires do you need when you put one-tenth of the number of miles on your car? Now, I'm figuring that our basic life goes back to normal here where you can go driving your time off. But you're not going to drive to work. How much gasoline do you not buy? Batteries? Just think of the automotive impact for the
local restaurant.
Well,
it's
the local restaurants, but I'm just talking just one aspect of it. I'm talking one aspect alone, and that's just the automotive end of things.
Is Terry talking to herself, or what's she doing over there?
What?
I can hear her over under you, Dave.
Yeah.
I was talking to Dave. Why does it sound weird?
Oh, he can't hear you. He's on a rant. You got to slow him down. I agree.
No, I said with people not going to work, like his point, you know, working from home, there's so many aspects to your day when you work in an office. Plus, you don't eat lunch at home. You go to a local restaurant for lunch from your office, and now you're not doing that anymore. And people who live in cities aren't riding the subway or an Uber or a taxi, or to Dave's point, just the automotive end, less miles on your car, less tires you're driving, less oil changes, less other maintenance that you regularly have done.
Everything. Yeah.
Every single thing from one person working from home.
Yeah. Well, it's the ripple effect of all of these different things. You know, what about the women? What about the women that buy the nice clothes, you know, so they look good at the office and everything? Well, she's working at home now. You know, she's in her sweats or a pair of shorts or whatever.
Yeah.
She's not out spending the money on clothes like she did before. She doesn't need to because she doesn't have to look good in her business suit at work.
It's not just clothes.
This stuff just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yep. Anyway, listen, March 27th, I wanted to give you these hard numbers, and that way you guys will end this conversation about this crap that's driving me nuts. But this is as of March 27th, 10 million strong, that's the population in Sweden, looks no more immune to it than its neighbors. Sweden has 2,510 cases and 42 deaths, according to data compiled by Bloomberg, compared with 2,916 cases and 12 deaths in Norway, and 2,014 cases and 34 deaths in Denmark. Yet the Danes have shut down schools, businesses, banned large gatherings, and handed the government sweeping emergency powers. Sweden has gone down a more laissez-faire route. Schools, bars, and cafes are still fully functional. Social distancing is recommended, but only for those age 70. Over 70 or otherwise at risk are asked to stay home. So they actually have less issues than the countries next to them who have done this draconian shutdown like the U.S. has.
Agreed.
Why? Here's the answer. Why would a country take such a relaxed stance amid of this brewing storm of hospitalization patients in Stockholm where the military is helping out, just like here in the U.S. all of a sudden? And the reason there's no damn freaking hospital beds is because there's 25,000 people with flu bugs that are running around everywhere or 400,000 people hospitalized. That's why there's no freaking bed. It's got nothing to do with damn coronavirus. But anyway, there's some economic self-interest. Sweden's open and trade-dependent economy is already facing its worst recession in living memory. Right? They don't want to crush that. And Swedish industrial Jacob Wallenberg has warned that lockdowns can lead to 20 to 30% unemployment. What do you think that's going to happen?
They're talking 32% here.
Yeah. Well, we have 336 million, right? So it's all relative. They're talking, if you say 10%, 20% is 7 million. You know, 30% is 9 million plus. And that's just the reported numbers. Because, you know, unemployment falls off reporting once you stop collecting checks. So it's no longer, you're no longer an active unemployed. You're not collecting unemployment. See, most people don't know that's how the system is measured. Yeah, exactly. So you're not counted because you're not collecting, but you're still unemployed. See, that is the problem. And then this, the numbers are all skewed. I have a very dear friend of mine in Milan, Italy. He's been on lockdown with him, his daughter, which I consider my niece, and his wife, Lise, for 3.5 weeks now. I mean, they cannot go outside but to walk the dog to the grocery store and back home. And they're saying, oh, the death rate in Italy, the death rate. You know what the average death rate is in Italy, for Christ's sake? 78 goddamn years old. Well, shit. Really? You can't take those numbers and put them into the regular number because guess what? Pneumonia would take out just as many of them 78-year-olds as the damn coronavirus would. Come on, it's ridiculous to even, you know, I'm just, I don't know what to think anymore.
You know, Jesse, I've also seen a lot of reports, a lot of them, where they're counting people in this death toll who did not die of the corona. They didn't even have it, but they were elderly. They already had pneumonia and
right.
other stuff in a hospital. And there has been people that were counted in the death toll, and they're saying, hello, I'm fine, I'm right here.
Yeah,
well, if you believe all the stuff that's flying around out here, have I got a deal for you. I got a bridge in Arizona that I'll make you a whale of a deal on. Over a great big river.
So I'm just curious.
The bottom line is, right? Yeah.
Wow.
The bottom line is, it's, you know, be prudent about what you do. Don't get yourself arrested for violating this stuff. But don't believe most of the bullshit that's flying around out here, because that's what it is.
Well,
it's bullshit.
Here's
and
funny.
You can't
I've
do anything about it anyway.
Tonight, Dave. Yeah.
What?
CNN of all, you know. CNN of all the places that like to
fake news
promote
network,
all kinds of
right.
nonsense. Yeah. Corona death rate is lower than previously reported, study says, but it's still deadlier than the flu. So I'm trying to find, here's what I found, and I just, you know, through Google, just did a random search. But this only goes up through February 29th. But up through February 29th, the average death rate confirmed 80 plus years old is 22%. 70 to 79 years old is 8%. And 60 to 69 years old is 4%. When you're talking 10 to 19, it's 0.2, 39 years old, 0.2, 50 years old, 0.4. And over 50, 1.3 between 50. So how is that any worse than any other flu? If you're, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, Mother Nature works. Yeah, Mother Nature works in its own ways, right? When the old lion gets tired, the young lions kill him off. That's the way shit works. That's the way Mother Nature is. Well, so I hate to say it, but God dang it, you're over 80 years old. You should be happy you're alive to begin with. If you died, well, shit, you died. Okay? And that's what the Swiss article continues to say. He says his grandmother, who she wrote the article, she's from Switzerland, she says, I'm 85 years old. What, are they trying to keep the oldies alive? Is that what they're worried about? We don't produce anything just for society. We're a burden on society. What the hell is the problem? She actually said that in the article. I thought that was great. But, you know, it's like, really, people? Whatever. I just...
The bottom line for all of this is we don't have control over it. None of us on this call has control over it. We're spectators, so get your bowl of popcorn and your cold drink and sit back and watch what happens. You're most likely not going to like some of it, but you're going to deal with it anyway the best you can. That's the bottom line for everybody. That's, you know, I'm doing it. I sell water when people want water. I'm trading the markets when I have the opportunity, and I go out when I need to get food. And the rest of the time, I'm here.
You know what I did? On Saturday, I went and fished the Derby in another county. And I told my wife at 5:01, because the curfew was over, I'm leaving. And at the end of the day, I'll call you, because when if your phone rings from me, it's because I'm in jail. I'm not going to get pulled over and get a ticket. They're going to have to arrest me. End of story. And she says, damn it, Jesse, I know you too well. I've been married a long time. When I know or I have a real belief in a principle, I'll take it all the way to the Gray Bar Hotel. I got enough money to bail out, and I know plenty of bail bondsmen that are good fishing buddies of mine. I don't
care. Amen.
And my wife called me at 5:50 and said, did you make it out of Osceola County? I said, yeah, I'm in Polk County. We're good. And when I got to the boat ramp, all the guys that were there locally were laughing because it was like Escape from New York. Tucker out, he made it out of freaking Osceola. Escape from Osceola. Because everybody's laughing like, are you kidding me? You're telling me I can't take my boat and go fishing with my son or my wife or by myself on a lake that I pay for to maintain. I pay to pave the roads, to pave the ramps, to build the parks. That's mine. That's not yours, idiot. I was appalled when they said that. So I said, I'm going fishing. I don't give a damn what anybody said. And I'm going to go fishing tomorrow again. Could give a shit what anybody said. At the end of the day, I'm not harassing nobody. Yeah, I'm not around anybody. I'm not partying with anybody. I'm acting by my damn self. So it's just really frustrating.
I went kayaking 2 days ago. Beautiful, 85 degrees out, river high, fast, all white water. 1 hour trip that's usually 3. To my dock, I could have done it several times in one day. And it rained today, but if the sun's out the day after, I'm going kayaking again.
Yeah, I don't know what to think, but I know that there is a constitutional right for several travel, these things, but there's a constitutional right for me to be able to go hunt and fish for my family. So if I'm going to go to the lake and catch fish, who are you to tell me? And I don't care if you're a police officer, I don't care if you're a park ranger, I don't care who you are, that I can't do this for my family. This is the most natural behavior of a human that exists, other than breathing, is to eat. Go kill something, cook it up, and eat it. That's called survival. So,
yeah.
I don't understand how any other man. Yeah, I don't get it.
So
I don't get it, man.
You look at him and you tell that officer, so unless you want to end up in the frying pan, I guess you let me go catch the bass.
Yeah, well, I know one of my buddies, the reason that this happened on Saturday morning, I was aware of all this. This Friday evening, my buddy Tim called me. He's a crane operator. So he drives around Orlando with a 75,000-pound or heavier crane. All he does is set trusses for builders, and he's on, you know, by the job guy, so he's independent. And our curfew is from 11 to 5 in the morning. They don't want you traveling at all unless it's absolutely essential for work or whatever. So at 6:15, he gets pulled over 2 blocks from the work site. And this trooper comes up to him and says, what are you doing? You know, we have a curfew. And he says, excuse me, because Tim's telling the guy, he says, curfew was over an hour and a half ago if you didn't know. It's 6:15 in the morning. He says, well, what are you doing here? He says, what the hell do you think I'm doing with a 75,000-pound crane sneaking around? I'm going to work. He called it a cop an idiot. He says, what do you think I'm doing at 6:15 in the morning? 75,000 pounds of metal behind me. And the cops, he says, well, where are you working? He says, right around the corner, like 2 blocks from here. And the cops followed him all the way to the website. Just to be an idiot.
Oh, please.
Yeah, he ought to be ashamed of himself, man. This is not why we pay you, law enforcement. So do your damn job.
That's somebody who's let his authority go to his head.
Yeah, way over top of
their
head.
They're out there. Yeah,
I mean,
they're
pretty
out there.
Terrible. Pretty terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what are you gonna do?
Well, the bottom line for us is, you know, we don't run the show, and we're all gonna have to deal with it in the way we think is proper and right. And
well, what I'm thinking of doing, believe it or not, is no. You can be a spectator. I'm gonna be a doer. And what I'm thinking of doing is getting together. I'm talking to a constitutional attorney who's very interested in doing a class action lawsuit against the government of the United States for violation of constitutional rights. And that's part of what we're working. I'm going to start doing that. I'm not going to sit on the sideline, Dave, because if they can pull this nonsense with the flu bug, How come when Obama was in office and there was the H1N1 scare and there was 61 million people that were infected, none of this ever went happened? Nothing happened. Why all of a sudden
Ebola is a Ebola is an irreversible death sentence. Ebola is an absolute dead. You get it. And there was nothing like this.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on, and there can be things done about it. And believe it or not, there is a very good constitutional attorney right here in Orlando who's I gave him the idea, and he says, shoot, I never thought about that. It's a pretty good deal, man. You can sue the government for loss, and you get the American people after them. Period. Because there's enough people who are just as pissed off as I am. This is nonsense. It's absolute and utter nonsense. So while I'm in favor of, you know, certain limitations and certain things, you don't shut down boat ramps, you don't shut down public parks, you don't, you know, if you want to go to the park, it's your park. It's your park. It's not their park. It's your park. You pay them.
Yeah.
We all pay.
You should have seen the gun store yesterday. I went to get some Target.
Oh, here it's insane.
Oh.
Been all over the news.
Oh my.
Yeah. We got blocked.
Oh my God.
Blocked. Yeah. People
are
waiting.
Oh no, ours is open and
ever.
And
oh, ours is too,
they
but they're waiting forever. Is my point.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
He's getting shipments every day, and they don't even have time to get stuff on the shelf. It's selling out of the boxes.
Right.
And needless to say, I couldn't get any 380 Target rounds because he didn't have any.
Yeah,
well, and it's interesting because there's a bunch of people out on the left coast, you know, the liberal nuts, the anti-gun people are seeing what's happening, and some of them are having a change of heart, and they're screaming bloody murder because there's a 10-day waiting period to be able to buy a gun.
Yeah,
didn't want anybody to have guns, and now they're whining because they can't get one.
Doesn't that come up
video.
Be careful what you ask for?
Yeah, there was a video of one of the gun store owners in California, and he says, yeah, quit coming to my store bitching at me and blah, 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 about all this weight and all these checks. He said, you should have got involved when you had the chance instead of being anti-gun. They put everybody in their place. I thought it was great. You know, so it goes on and on. All right, we've been rattling enough. I'm freaking... My blood pressure's through the roof the last 3 days. I'm so pissed off over this crap.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
It is a different world we live in.
I just sincerely apologize.
Yeah,
I just can't sit idly by. I never have been able to. I've never been able to sit idly by and get screwed. Not when it don't feel good anyway. You know, that just is not acceptable.
Yep.
That's not acceptable. It's just not acceptable. You know, it is what it is. Anyway, Dave, we shall continue. And my apologies.
I think that's a great idea. We're here to take any good news that people have got, and we're also here to answer any questions we can for the listeners. So we're going to lump everything all into it. We're not going to try and segregate it by good news. If you've got good news or you have a question for us, either one, we'll take them in any order. But I'm going to look at the ones on the screen and take them in the order that people raise their hands by hitting the one key on the keypad on their phone. Hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. That'll put you in the queue. And, of course, as I've said so many times before, and I mean it, if you don't have your hand up and there's no more hands up, we're going to say goodnight.
We're gone.
Because we've all got other things to do. Jesse can go out and go shooting and take his frustrations out on whatever happens to be handy.
I got to sneak around and go fishing. That's what's happening.
Yeah, and I'll go out and get my 2.5-mile walk in, even if it's dark. So, you know, if you got questions or good news, hit that one key so that we can take your call. And we're going to go to... I think this is going to possibly be Kim because it's 1111111, and you've been unmuted.
Okay, yeah, this is Kim and Brian. Okay.
There you go.
You hit it right on it.
Yeah, I can tell because you're one of the few that – comes up with all ones. A lot of times that's an internet call, but it is what it is. So you're up to bat. Go ahead.
Okay. I had a defendant's memorandum of law to support a motion to strike and or motion to dismiss Second Amendment complaint. Okay. What's happening is they're saying that it is therefore ordered that the plaintiff, which is me, shall have 30 days from the entry of this order to file an amended complaint that cures the deficiencies previously identified by the court. And that's from the appeal. So we didn't address the deficiencies correctly. So I didn't know if there was anything else we can do, because we have Wells Fargo Bank as the defendant, and I know we're not supposed to, and they're supposed to be the original creditor, right? So I guess that's the deficiency that was.
Well, you have to read what the court said, because the court will say specifically what the deficiency is, and then you have to correct that. So you can't assume anything. Read what the court said and respond specifically to that.
Okay. All right. Okay, so being that Wells Fargo is the original creditor.
Well, is that what the court said?
No.
Well, you listen to what I'm saying here. They're saying you have to cure the deficiencies identified by the court. Go read the documents from the court and see precisely.
Yeah, it'll tell you what it is.
What does it say?
Okay.
It's telling you, the court is saying what's wrong. And
okay.
You have to respond to that.
Okay. All right. Okay. We got it. Okay.
You sure?
Yeah. I can read this that they had sent me to tell me what the situation is. It says here, as the plaintiff's appeal of the court's dismissal without prejudice of his claim under 15 U.S.C. 1692 CB and NC General Stats. The Fourth Circuit held that the dismissal order was neither a final order nor an appealable interlocutory or collateral order and dismissed plaintiff's appeal in part for lack of jurisdiction. The Fourth Circuit remanded the case, directing the court in its discretion either to afford the plaintiff another opportunity to amend or dismiss these claims with prejudice, thereby rendering the dismissal order a final appellate judgment. So I guess they're giving me another chance.
Well, they were talking there about another case, right? Or was that about yours?
It was about my case, but this was in the beginning where I lost the case, but I was able to appeal because it was one that was without prejudice and one was with prejudice. So
I'm confused. I'm confused as to
me too, right?
Where we are.
The counts, you mean? What the counts were without and with?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm confused. You were sued in state court by Bank
yes.
of America. Okay.
No,
then
Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo. Okay. Then you sued Wells Fargo. Why am I thinking Bank of America and now we're talking Wells Fargo here?
That's a different case.
Well,
this
got me confused.
Right. This was Wells Fargo. This was the very first case when we first started to get on the calls. So we weren't all up to speed with a lot of stuff. And,
yeah.
And you know, things didn't actually work out until, you know. So now we're on to, another case. But this one, we were able to appeal because of
Okay, well, let's separate these things. We're not talking about the Wells Fargo deal. That's over and done with, gone. Is that correct or not?
Well, it was over and done with in the state court, but then we went to appeal in federal.
No, you don't appeal a state court judgment in federal court. If you have a state court judgment, that has to be appealed in state court.
State appellate.
Okay.
Now, see, this is why I'm confused, because we got different things here, and I'm not understanding what's going on, how the pieces are fitting together here.
Okay, because I got Kim with me here. We were trying to go over this, and
okay. Let me see if I can help him a little bit here. Again, this was the very first case filed in federal under Wells Fargo, Brock and Scott.
Okay, now Kim, I got a question for you. He said
yes.
There was you filed an appeal in federal court. Obviously. Well, here again, you lose in state court, you have to appeal in state court. If you filed a federal lawsuit against them, that was for FDCPA violations, I'm going to guess. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that's got nothing to do with the state case.
Correct.
That's
okay.
Just claims made under a federal statute. And I think you may have put North Carolina statute in there as well. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So you filed a case in federal court under FDCPA, federal, and North Carolina debt collection statutes. Are we clear? Is that all correct so far?
Correct.
Okay. So now take us from what happened with that? You filed that federal case, and exactly what happened?
The federal case you're asking about? In federal
yes.
case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the federal case where you filed a claim against Wells Fargo and Brock and Scott. That's what you said you did in the federal case, right?
Right.
Okay, so you filed that claim. Well, then what happened from there? You filed it, and then what happened?
Filed the first amended complaint, and we removed Wells Fargo from the first amended complaint.
Okay, so then the only remaining defendant after that was Brock and Scott, correct?
That is correct. This was a bad one. This was our first one. But they got us on process of service.
Service of process.
Service of process. That was where the argument was. Because when we filed the very first complaint, original complaint, it was Wells Fargo, and it was not in Brock and Scott, and we did not serve the agent. So we asked to once we got on the calls, then that's when y'all all was saying do not do FDCPA to original creditors.
Mm-hmm.
Then we filed the second, I mean, we amended the first amended complaint, and we removed Wells Fargo.
Okay.
But it was.
So just to clarify then, then when you did that, the only defendant you had was Brock and Scott, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, Brian's saying there was another gentleman on there, the assistant to Brock and Scott. We end up adding, so we removed someone, we added a defendant to the case.
Okay, so you removed Wells Fargo and you added another individual person.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I'm walking you through this because there was confusion here, and I'm wanting to make sure that we take it one step at a time, what happened, until we get to the present. So go forward from there. So you did that second amended amended complaint. You dropped Wells Fargo. You added another individual as a defendant. So you got that individual and Brock and Scott. Correct?
Correct.
Correct.
All right. Now, where do we go from there?
Okay. Then at that point, we had lost the case, the summary judgment that we lost, motion to dismiss, due to the process service, the way it was, because they wanted...
Service of process.
Of process, Kim. You know this. You know this. Yep. Oh, got it. I know
yep.
this. Okay. Service of process.
Okay.
Then... Okay, from that point on, during the paperwork, we did something stupid. We went back, and we added Wells Fargo back after we had to call to talk with Jesse that time.
Okay. Now, but wait a minute. How did you add Wells Fargo back to it if it was dismissed?
No, not yet. It wasn't dismissed yet. I forgot that little part. I forgot that.
Oh, okay.
I forgot.
All right, so
okay.
You put Wells Fargo back in along with the other two.
Right.
I need something to laugh at.
Right.
This is crazy. Yes, that's correct. Okay. So at this point, now they had a motion to dismiss with prejudice.
Right.
And so we filed an appeal. And with the appeal, the judge stated in the order that we did not argue the service of process. And therefore, Brock and Scott was dismissed. And that was affirmed by the fourth appellate court. But
oh,
then
you took that decision, the federal decision, to the Fourth Circuit? You did
yes.
the appeal in the federal case, correct?
That is correct.
Yes.
Okay.
But like you said, we also put in the North Carolina statutes. And this is where the judge had mentioned the order, I'm sorry, let's say it right, the appellate order is what Brian had read on the, what they call the deficiencies.
On the what?
He wasn't. And
deficiency.
Right. That we said that that was a deficiency when he, did his supporting fact.
Yeah, so I didn't know if there was anything that I could do sent to the court about either dismissing
well,
the amended
no, well, no, wait a minute. You got it dismissed. You appealed it to the Fourth Circuit. The Fourth Circuit then rules and upheld the dismissal or upheld some stuff but had other things to say. I'm not clear on that.
Okay. It says, on appeal to the Fourth Circuit, plaintiff did not challenge the basis for the court's dismissal with prejudice of his claim against Brock and Scott for insufficient service of his claim under the 15 U.S.C. 1692G.
So the Fourth Circuit said that you didn't support, you didn't argue their claim, so they upheld the dismissal.
Right. So it says here, the Fourth Circuit affirmed the court's judgment as to dismissal of those two claims as the plaintiff's appeal for the court's dismissal without prejudice of his claim under the 15 U.S.C. 1692. And the North Carolina General Statute. And then it says, the Fourth Circuit held the dismissal order was, they held the dismissal order was neither a final order nor an appellable interlocutory or collateral order and dismissed the plaintiff's appeal in part for lack of jurisdiction.
Do any of the other moderators understand that part for lack of jurisdiction?
Zero. I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
I still can't get it. Terry got most of it. She got way more than I got.
Right. And I'm reading it right. This is how they had put it down. Then it has the Fourth Circuit remanded the case directing the court in its discretion either to afford the plaintiff another opportunity to amend or dismiss these claims with prejudice, thereby rendering the dismissal order a final appellable judgment.
Okay.
So that's how they have that.
Okay. Well, that's more information we didn't have.
Now, I understand that part.
Yeah, I understand that. So then the lower court, they remanded it back to the lower court. And what did the lower court do?
Okay.
The lower court allowed him to do a second amendment on
a second amended complaint.
Correct. Right, on the deficiencies.
To cure the
deficiencies.
Okay,
so you have to go back to what the court stated the deficiencies were when they dismissed it. What was their reason for dismissal? That's what you have to deal with. That's what you have to address.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're talking that your district court there. Why did they dismiss it in the first place? And
right.
You have to go and read that and see what they said the problem was. Now, you know the Brock and Scott is out, but as to the rest of the claim, then you have to figure out what they said the problem was there and address that and argue that. Or, I'm not argue it, but cure that in your amended complaint.
Okay. All right. This is where the dilemma is. We had filed an amended complaint, the second amended complaint, but we did not address the deficiency properly, and that's why the defendant, which is Brock and Scott, is asking the motion to strike the second amended complaint and motion to dismiss. It says motion to strike and or motion to dismiss second amended complaint. So all we have to do, Brian and I, just go back and fix the amended complaint to address it properly.
As far as I can see, that looks like what you need to do.
Okay.
Does anybody disagree with that?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, then I can try to figure it out, Brian. He's going to work with me with this one.
Yeah.
This is hard.
Yeah, because
okay.
it has here just what you were saying about that it says such amended complaint must contain a short and plain statement of the claim showing that plaintiff is entitled to relief against remaining defendant, Wells Fargo. And then it says the amended complaint must clearly set forth the factual allegations that support plaintiff's claim.
Okay, now, you were going to make an FDCPA claim against Wells Fargo?
Well, that's what
I mean,
the original...
Excuse me, can't scratch that. Your only defendant you have left is Wells Fargo, because you had put them back in?
Right.
Right, that's the issue, yes.
Well, I think... My personal opinion, I think you have a real hard time having any kind of a anything that'll pass muster going against an original creditor.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And we was trying to figure out how do we end this without going through a lot of.
I think if
you
just
dismissed your claim,
didn't respond to it, the court would move forward and dismiss it, and it'd be done.
That's true too.
With prejudice, okay. Yeah.
Okay, both
that's what the appellate court said. You can either, the lower court can either give you the chance to reamend, or if you don't reamend, the lower court can dismiss with prejudice and be done with it.
Okay.
So if you just did nothing, that would basically bring it to an end.
End it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I know that last 20 minutes led to that. Sorry.
Sometimes that's what it takes, though, because you have to have a very clear-eyed vision of what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah. This is, you know, sometimes we end up in some somewhat convoluted conversations, but that's why we ask questions, like why I went through this procedure is because we want to have a clear picture, so we're not giving you our erroneous thoughts
right.
About how you should handle a situation or how we'd handle it if we were in your shoes. We just need to have a clear picture, and if we don't have one, then at least for me, I'm going to ask a bunch of questions until it is clarified.
And I appreciate that, both of us. Let me say this. This was our very first case, and the world's most educated ever.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, you start somewhere. Yeah.
Yes.
We all start our education at some point in time for some reason. And that doesn't mean just because we start learning that all of a sudden we're magically really smart and we know how to do things. No. Education takes time and experience.
Yes, and with the help of experienced people, too, that's a great, that's how you get learning and get better at this. Thank you. And I was saying, Brian, I don't know if we just leave this alone or do we respond, but I think we should just leave this alone, but we need to ask.
we got to get on the call. We got to find out the outcome of this.
Well, But see, it's a learning experience for you because you learn more about how the process works and how, you know, in the situation, given the facts of as they are, you found out that, well, no, I don't have to do something to have this come to an end. I can just do nothing, and a court
right.
will finish it.
Okay.
So
nice.
You've learned that part of things. So you're learning about procedure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Sure.
And Jesse, I have a question for you with this craziness.
Yes,
like
ma'am.
You said, on forbearance with this mortgage that a lot of mortgagers and banks are offering mortgage holders.
Right now they're stuck. They can't do anything.
Oh, when you...
Yes.
Who is stuck and who can't do anything?
The banks cannot foreclose or throw people out on the streets.
That is correct. That is, yes.
Yep.
They're holding back on foreclosures, bankruptcy cases, depending on that.
Evictions,
but my question,
stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Right.
But now on the forbearance, they are offering, if you don't have to pay, for the one we're dealing with, I'm saying about the mortgagee I'm speaking of that we deal with, they're offering 180 days of forbearance, but once you're able to pay, you have to pay everything at once. You have to pay all your back mortgage.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
That's crazy. Up front, including current month. So I know, you know, I've been studying the exit plan for foreclosures on the website. I've been really got my paperwork with the court and so on and so forth. Now, dealing with an exit plan, is that something you would consider at a time like this?
Oh, I don't know about paying for everything at once. That's the big part. That I hadn't heard of such a thing. That's absurd. How can they
neither
expect that of somebody?
I figured that's what they do.
Because forbearance is usually where they tack it on to the end of the loan.
Correct.
That is correct.
And
yes,
and if they're making it if they're converting it into a balloon payment, that's a little bit different.
You want to stay away from that. Well, you can't pay. Interesting.
You know, if one of the things I'll make a comment here. It's my own personal thoughts. If somebody is in a position to pay, I would suggest they pay.
Of course.
And not get
yep.
into that. If you have no choice and you have to do that, then make sure you understand what the terms are and where you're going to be at some future time when you do have to pay.
Right.
But, you know, there'll be a certain number of people that, oh, well, we don't have to pay our house payment now. So they won't, and they'll go blow the money on something else. And then when it comes time that they got to come up with that lump sum to pay it back, because, you know, it's not like your payment, your obligation disappears for that month's payment. Oh, it's still out there. The million-dollar question is exactly when does it have to be paid, not if.
Right.
And if you don't have to get yourself in that situation, you know, dealing with a forbearance, don't. You know, if you're able to pay, pay. Because what you're doing is you're just eliminating one potential problem down the road. Now, if you can't do it because of the circumstances, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But make sure if you do get into that forbearance that you are very, very informed on exactly what the situation is going forward, when you are going to have to pay and how much you are going to have to pay. So that you're not surprised thinking, oh, well, I didn't know I'd have to pay it all at once. You know, like Kim, you said, they're saying they want it all at one time. Well, that might be a tough trick to handle.
Yes.
But then again, in the meantime, if you pay the payment and you don't eat, well, are you going to be around to pay any payments later on? No, you're going to fade away into oblivion because you don't eat. So, you know, you got to weigh, I'd say, be careful to weigh the different circumstances that everybody's in.
Right. And I don't believe that all foreclosures have been stopped, because the way it reads, it's just the government insured, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, the
Most
Farm Home Loan Bureau. But if they're by a major bank that's a portfolio lender, or they have been privately securitized and sold in the foreign markets, they're not going to be subject to that. So you have to be careful. And depending on the jurisdiction you're in, not all courts see the things the same way. Here in Florida, and I was on a webinar today with a rather large law firm, and they were explaining from the landlord point of view that you can go ahead in court and still move for an eviction, you know, to get that judgment, but the court won't issue the writ to throw the people out until all this is cleared. So you can go ahead and get your judgment now, but they won't send the sheriff to throw the people out until all this stuff is cleared. And it, and they were saying it was the same thing for foreclosures too. If you have a pursuable foreclosure, you can get a final judgment. They just won't send it up for auction and everything. So you have to be careful with where you're getting your information from, because there's a lot of different information going around, and it might not play out the way people think it does.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. And I'm good. Brian, you good? We're great.
You know what? Right.
Yes.
With what John just said, before I forget, I would put in a little caveat warning. My daughter got some information today where somebody is sending out an 800 number where supposedly you can call and check on the status of your share of the stimulus check. And, of course, they want your banking auto deposit information and all that stuff. So
right.
Please do not fall for something like that. And if you see an 800 number, unless you see the Treasury Department, Steve Mnuchin, President Trump, an official missive come out about a website or a website you can a number you can call, do not do it.
Yeah, there's lots of scams going out there, tons of them. So be careful.
Terry,
thank you.
Do you mean that the email I got from Steve Mnuchin with his private email that where he told me I'm entitled to $9 million? If I just provide him with my name, address, phone number, and banking information, that's fake.
Yeah, I wouldn't respond to anything in email.
Yeah,
because anything like that, they're going to announce on official mainstream media. You know.
Official
yeah,
fake
I would
news
say
media?
You know. Why don't you give Steve a call and hold his feet to the fire and tell him you want it.
That's it.
Okay, does that take care of you, Kim? Brian?
Yes. Thank you so much again.
Yes, we appreciate it.
All righty, you're welcome. You have a great evening.
Thank you. You all do the happy.
Okay, and I'm going to tell everybody, we got a couple people with hands up here, but if there's other people that got questions or good news for us, because we'll take either one, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone, because when I run out of people with their hands up, we're done. All right, let's go to 816. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Michelle. You were
Hello.
In Kansas City. Two things with Jesse saying about doing that suit against the government. There is a template for you. It's called the Iron Mountain Report. It was created in 1966, and if you go with your attorneys or whoever legal people you're going with to do the lawsuit against the corporation, United States government corporation, that Iron Mountain Report is a free PDF on the internet. And that will guide you and step you right through everything you need to do. The other topic is I tried to set up, I tried to go, as you had said, Dave Mack, about going on PACER, and I didn't go through the website, What Lies in Your Debt. I just went on. And should I do that? Because it was telling me that they had to send me a key so I could get in the PACER website to look at. But my understanding when you said things was that there's a certain way that people do something with the case so that you don't have to pay per page to view it. And I think
no,
I might have missed.
Okay, here's the thing. When you first of all, you have to set up an account with PACER. And you get an ID and the password so that you can log in. Okay.
Right.
Now, once you have that, what you do is you go, you just Google recap the law. And if you're going to use, like we, I use Firefox, recap for Firefox. I download that. It's a real, it's a small file. It's real quick and easy, and it loads automatically. And then every time that you log into Pacer with your ID and your password, it brings up recap the law. So that when you go in there, if you go and look at a document that's in the docket of a certain case, if it hasn't been recapped already, then you're going to pay so much a page, 10 cents a page for it. But then okay. that automatically recaps it so that, let's say I want it, you tell me about that case and I want to go look at it, then I can go look at it free. And then, of course, vice versa. If I looked at it first and I recapped it, then you can go look at it free. But once it's recapped, then anybody, everybody in the world can go look at it free of charge. Now, the way to tell if something is recapped is there is a blue or purple, I'm partially colorblind, box around the document number. And that, and there'll be an R. That indicates that document is recapped. That's how you can tell if something is recapped or not. And if it's not recapped and you want to download that, then you're going to be charged the 10 cents a page.
Well, see, what is this that they're saying they have to send me a key in the mail? The only keys I know are the kind for trading accounts so that it's like a wallet. That key, you know, so I can get in the trading account.
Right.
Okay, what were they meaning about having to mail me a key? Is that
I have no this is
okay.
Is this from Pacer?
Yeah, and I didn't go through the website. What lies in your debt? That's why I'm trying
no,
to clarify.
No, you don't go through. Yeah, you don't go through what lies in your debt to do that.
Okay,
that's you individually.
Okay.
But if Pacer says that they need to send you something, then that's what you need to follow. Maybe they've instituted that procedure. I don't. It's been so many years. It's been almost 10 years since I got my account.
Dave,
I don't even remember.
They've made a lot of changes over this past
year. Oh, I know they
have.
Yeah.
And when you get on a docket, like Dave was explaining, when you see the blue box with the R on it. You click on that R instead of the number of the doc, and that gets you to a recapped version that you don't have to pay for. But the caveat is, and it's very important, don't ever download the recap for the whole docket. Get into the docket first, because that might not be up to date if you do that.
Right.
Okay.
But in reference to your question about, well, they have to send you the password through the mail, that could be that's the way they're doing it now.
Right. Well, I don't know that it's a password. They just said you can't get into this site until we send you a key, provide your address, et cetera, which I did. And they said it'd be 7 to 10 business days. Well, of course, right now we have all kinds of time that we didn't always have, including me being able to even get on these calls, because for 30-something years I've been working when your calls were happening. And, I mean, I've been working for that many years, and then the last 10 years or 7 or whatever, I've been able to even know about that because of my own house situation. Okay, so now one other thing, the third thing, and that is you all have been talking about Midland Credit forever, and I'm finally in their loop.
Oh, you lucky person, you.
Well, and today it even got juicier. The third crash ago, they finally got a judgment on that hospital bill. And it has been bought by Midland. And today Midland called. It said no caller ID, but I was real nice. I said, well, there's three Michelles here, which is true. and you need to let me know which one and who you are so they can call you back. And so she graciously gave me their phone number and said it was Midland Credit. So now that they've made that call, then I can send them in the loop of all of these violations that they even called to begin with, right?
Well, just because they called you doesn't necessarily mean they broke the law.
Okay, what if
you know, they're allowed to pursue debt collection, but they have to do it within the law.
Okay. Well, that's the first in all of my life that I've ever had a call from Midland, and again, it came up no caller ID. And so I took the number, and no, I didn't call back. And
well, they're not supposed to do that right on the get-go. They can't match the caller ID.
Well, it says no.
Yeah, they do that
ID.
All the time.
I know, but yeah. It's a violation for them to do that.
So which violation is it?
That falls under FDCPA because they're not identifying themselves.
Right.
Okay. And now just getting a piece of mail from them, which I got before that call happened today, there's no violation there, correct?
Well, the first thing you do when you get a Dunning notice, which is a demand for payment, the very first thing you do is you send them a demand for validation of the alleged debt.
Okay.
And you want to do that immediately, right away.
Okay.
And I'm assuming you haven't done that yet, so you want to do that tomorrow.
No, I just got that last week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's sample letters on the website.
Yeah.
Use a short one.
Yeah.
That's your first step. Send it certified mail so you have proof that they got it.
Okay.
And then you got to wait and see what you get from them as a response.
And now with all this courts, and now I did talk to the federal court. The people at the federal court, based on things that we had talked about last time I was on a call. And they were very nice. And now, am I understanding, or do I need to revisit things on the website? Am I understanding that when I do a federal case, I am going to mail or serve the entity that I'm going to sue? I need to sue them.
Yeah, you have to follow the rules. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure number 4 is the specifics as far as service
and
process.
And that lets them know that I am going to file in a federal.
No. That's done when you file. After you file, you file your complaint with the federal court, then the clerk of the court provides a summons. You have to, when you file your claim, you have to fill out a civil cover sheet. That'll be on the federal court's website. You've got to fill that out. And then you go to the court clerk, and usually you can do this when you file your lawsuit. Have your clerk give you a couple signed copies of the summons. And then you have to have that properly served under, and you look at Federal Rule Civil Procedure number 4 covers the proper service, who can serve and so on and so forth. It's very specific.
Okay, now I'm going to get clarification on another matter. Same type of, remember at one point I talked about doing a verified claim, and then when we discussed how many phone calls were coming in, then I got clear to do a federal filing instead of a verified claim in the county court. So I don't need to let them know that I'm going to file in federal court. That all happens after I file, and then based on what you just said, then I get service of process to them.
Right. You don't have to tell them I'm going to sue you. You can just go ahead and you can write up your complaint, file it with the federal court, get your summons, and serve that on them, and that's how they are notified there's a claim against them. Then they have to answer the complaint within 21 days.
Okay. And now with all of this that's going on and like you all were talking about at the beginning of this call, where the courts are just not holding court, or that's my summation, then a number of these filings I'm getting ready to do, those calls were starting about this time last year. So I just go ahead and file or find out if I can continue to file, even though the courts are not seeing.
Talk to your court clerks. Call your court clerks there and say, you know, I need to file a federal claim for under the TCPA. Are you accepting claims, you know, filings at this time, or is there some kind of restriction because of the coronavirus?
Well,
what would be the best way to do it, to bring it in personally or to mail it in?
Okay, because when I called them, like we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, that was right at the beginning of this whole coronavirus thing, and they didn't think of it as, you know, you can come in or you can mail it in, either one. But then it's escalated since then, so I'll probably need to just call them again, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's if I were in your shoes, I would definitely call them and see if there anything had changed in that regard. And if so, then, you know, you just do what you got to do.
Okay. And to close up what I'm, you know, talking and asking and saying, that Iron Mountain report, doubtless you all have heard about it. But basically, in effect, in 1966, it replaced our Constitution, unbeknownst to us. And they have been implementing stages of that my whole life, and I'm going to be 65 next month. But that report was what it was for, was to focus where they were going with all that they were doing, even as early as World War II. Which was before I was born. But then they got it down in writing and have been implementing the things we've been living quite a bit for many years. But this coronavirus thing is one that was in that report. Not the word coronavirus, but what shutting down the economy and so on and so on. And they wouldn't have known about the internet at the level it's at now and all of that. But anybody as intelligent as all of you, with all the stuff that you and Terry and Jesse know, it will make total sense to you. And being a PDF and being free, Jesse, it'll give you footing.
I don't see. I've looked it up, and all I see is books I'm going to buy from Amazon. I don't see anything free.
I found it free, a free PDF, and I printed it off, and I will find it again.
Yeah, I have it too. My grandfather worked there during that time.
Yeah.
You have a PDF, Terry?
What's that?
You have the PDF?
Yeah, somewhere in my computer. I can look for it tomorrow. It's down tonight already. It's already shut off.
Yeah. Well,
if you find it, let me know. If not, I'll find it in a day or two.
Yeah.
But if you find it, Terry, email.
Okay.
As good as you are, Jesse, then you can go point by point and just slap it back to them, because they did this without any of us knowing it. And I never even thought about it when I read the report myself here in the last couple of weeks. But since you brought up that you're willing to do that, then then you can go forward, and you're smart enough to and experienced enough, more than anything, to go forward. And so that's all I have to say. I might need to take up a little bit of time. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All righty. Thank you. You have a great evening.
Thank you.
Okay. We are going to go to 908. 908, you are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you this evening?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. From about the student loans. I know he's laughing. Oh, you're going to laugh tonight. So the attorney had till today to answer my complaint, because remember we gave them the extension back in February. So he texts me Friday and asks me, because of coronavirus, he's unable to respond to the complaint, and that I should have sympathy for him and his clients, because his client's job is shut down and their job is shut down, and it would be unsympathetic on my behalf to not to give them another extension. I opposed to it, of course. I says everybody's working from home, so just respond to the answer from working from home. So I called the court, federal court, and that the chief judge ordered that everything can be emailed. So therefore, I told him, you know, I didn't tell him anything. I just said, look, what the chief judge said, you can email it to they accept an email. So how hard is that just to answer the response? The other party never responded, even with being served. So they never responded. So at this point, they're, I guess, after today, the default. He did answer by 7 o'clock today. I just got the answer. But it was very vague. Denied everything, of course. Even denied the point that they didn't send me a valid, they never sent me a Dunning letter initially before they started garnishing my wages. And the only thing they admitted to was that they did not contact me regarding supposedly a quote-unquote hearing that the Department of Education had regarding the wage garnishment, which I don't think there is no hearing. So I think from this point on, I would have to wait. If the judge responds, he will order me to respond to him. Am I right or wrong? For the answer.
Well,
believe you're
okay.
Right.
You sued them, and they filed an answer.
Yes.
But no. As long as they answered it, then the case would move forward. Now you got to keep one thing in mind. You're the plaintiff. You're the one driving the bus. So it's your responsibility to move the case forward.
Okay. So with that said, so there's no need to respond to his answer, even if it's very vague. The judge will order for a Rule 26,
no.
So I can ask for.
Well, no, you don't. You don't argue an answer to a complaint. A lot of people think that that's proper. It's not. You make the complaint. Say, hey, you beat me up, and I want you to pay me. And they said, no, we didn't beat you up. Well, that's where you start the dance. That's where the case starts moving forward. You get into your 26F conference. The court issues a scheduling order as to how the case is going to be pursued, you know, how it's going to proceed. And then you get into doing your discovery, and then you move forward either to summary judgment or a trial on the merits. That's a very quick, easy explanation of the process. But you made a complaint. They've now answered timely. So the next step is going to be for the court to recognize that they have filed an answer, and the court will probably send you a notice to do your 26F conference confer with the other side on, you know, how long you need for discovery and all these other issues. You know, when are the deadlines for all the things like adding additional parties, so on and so forth. And then the court will issue an actual scheduling order stating, okay, here's the deadlines, and then you have to do your initial disclosures once you have that Rule 26F conference. So that's basically what you're looking at. The court should be sending something to you pretty soon as far as, you know, getting the case moving. But keep in mind, you're the plaintiff. You're the one that's driving the bus, so it's up to you to keep it moving forward. It's not up to the other side.
Yeah, because he wanted the extension because he claimed that they wanted to longer time to settle. But once the judge issued them an extension in February, and I agreed to that, I didn't hear anything else from him. And
right.
I didn't hear anything else from him until 2 days before you have to, the answer is due. So that's why I told him, no, I'm opposed to it. And
right.
They took out of my check again last week, my last check, because right now I'm out of work. I'm still getting paid,
well,
but I'm out of work.
What you need to do is tell that attorney, no more extension. You answered. We're going to move forward with the case, but I'm always open to discussions of settlement. That's one thing you always want to do, because if you're not talking, are you ever going to settle an issue? Of course not.
No,
so you
no,
always
no.
want to remind them, I'm always open to discussing settlement on this matter. I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Anytime I have anything going on with anybody that I've sued, I always want to put that out there, because what's the end result? Do I want to go all the way to a trial before a jury, or do I want to check? I want to check.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So,
and I went to my job regarding that, too, and they had me email an outsourced third-party contractor who I thought was a little absurd, and the contractor responded with, this is the way we've been doing it for a long time, and that's how it's going to go.
Doesn't mean it's legal.
Yeah, exactly. So when I looked up Pennsylvania law, it did state that if your job is giving somebody your wages without a court order, that it's a form of theft, and that they were the state would have charged them. You are legally entitled to treble damages, 3 times, and 25% on top of what they took from you.
Well, then I would be discussing that with the attorney on the other side and tell them, I think you need to get this resolved right now before it gets worse.
Okay.
That's the way I present it to them. You're in violation of the law. You didn't use a proper process before you started garnishing my wages. And the law in the state of Pennsylvania is very clear in that you're breaking the law, and it doesn't matter if it's your agent. They're doing it at your behest and your request. So they're incurring liability. As well as yourselves, and the sooner this is resolved, the cheaper it's going to be for you, because not only do I get my money back, but it's trebled, and then there's extra money available to me under that. Just go read the law and find out for yourself.
Yeah.
In other words,
let
them know that you know what the law says.
Exactly. I can hit them on both ends. I can hit them on state, and I can hit them on the federal end. But like you said, I would rather for them to just, like you said, get a check and move on from here. Because it's, like I told them, I said, you didn't give me no communication. After I issued you the first extension, I never heard from you ever again. Then, 3 days before, then you're begging me to give you another one. And I flat out said, no, not, not going to happen.
Well, that doesn't matter now. That's past stuff, that's in the past. So now it's like, okay, are you going to keep violating the law and rack up more damages, or do you want to talk settlement and resolve this issue? You quit taking money out of my check, and you pay me what you've taken plus what I'm entitled to. you know, your choice.
Your choice, yeah. And
you know, you can either do it voluntarily or you
it.
Can, well, what I tell them is you can either do it voluntarily now or have the court tell you to do it later on. And the court might end up placing sanctions on you as well. So, you know, do you want to do it the easy way or do you want to do it the hard way?
Exactly. Or his excuse is that they're not taking out student loans anyway because of the Trump issue regarding no student loans
Well, that's because of the coronavirus stuff. They have to stop all of that stuff right now. But that doesn't mean that as soon as that lets up, they don't start right up and do it. And what about the money they've already taken from you that they weren't entitled to take?
Exactly.
That's what you want.
4,000 plus. Yeah, 4,000 plus.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you. I'm ready to rock and roll.
You're welcome.
I'm not giving up.
No, don't do that.
No, I won't.
All righty. We'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you.
Have a good night.
Okay. Yep. It's time to say good night. We have no more hands up. So, folks, we're done. And who's got the webinar tomorrow?
I have to look. I don't know. Oh, do you, Jim?
Yep. We're going to do
NCLC.
We're going to touch on the FTC. Yeah. FDCPA case law from 2019. The NCLC put out a little reference material. It's quite interesting, so we're just going to touch on that and answer questions.
Okay, very good.
Nice.
All right, and that's 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow for all the members. And if you're not a member, well, get going. Get yourself signed up so that you've got access to that information. And all the other information in the website, that's the whole idea of it. You know, you can get a certain amount of information on these calls, but if you're not a member, you don't have access to all of that information that everybody else does. And, of course, Terry has her call on Thursday night, as usual, at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you're not on Terry's email list to get the information she sends and get the information for her call, the number and the PIN code, send an email to queensongbird, that's all one word, queensongbird@gmail.com. All you got to do in the subject line is say, please put me on your list, and she'll get her done. She'll send you one reminder out and giving you the number. She doesn't send that out regularly every week. So when you get that information, jot it down somewhere where you don't lose it, and then you have it going forward. And with all that said, we're going to be back in 2 weeks, but Jesse gets to say the last word.
That's a great one. Well, thanks to our moderators as usual. And all our members, guys, join up. This is going to be a time where it might help you down the road for those of you that are just window shopping as usual. Join, like Dave says, you can't get everything that we give, and I'm going to be working hard, Dave. Actually, I'm promoting the site, which is the first time I've ever done that in 10 years, because I think what's coming down the pike is beyond what anybody can even imagine.
You're right.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, and I never have been. I try not to be because I'm a positive person, but, man, I mean, you know, you're talking 5 years, 6 years minimum to recover just from what we've done in the last month and a half. It's that bad, so. With that being said, God bless everybody. Have a great week. And really, really, really consider yourself membership. And if you have to team up, we can do that too with two other people. Just check Terry on. So anyway, guys, have a great week. Thanks, John. I'll try to get on there tomorrow. I doubt it, but we'll try. And
okay.
We'll go from there. You guys have a great night. Appreciate you guys.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great week, and we'll talk to you on Terry's call tomorrow night.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.